Well, it's in their baby formula. It's in their school lunch. It's in their hamburgers and in their hamburger buns. In fact, soy is in many, if not most, of the processed foods we feed our children. That we feed our children so much of this magic bean leads us to ask, could ubiquitous soy cause precocious puberty?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 911th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Singapore who are tuned in, stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Welcome back from vacation, and also a special welcome to our new friends who are tuned in Missouri and Iowa and Illinois on WGEM in Quincy. Also to our new friends in Pennsylvania who are tuned in on as we broadcast on WEEU in Reading, Pennsylvania. Well, folks, I have a challenge for you here today, and the challenge is for you to go out into the world and find a loaf of bread that does not contain some form of soy. Good luck! Soy has become ubiquitous. It's in our baby's formula. It's in our children's school lunch. It's in our kids' hamburgers and in their hamburger buns. As parents, we now feed our children soy from the moment they are born to the day they go out into the world on their own. And speaking of our children, there is something else we simply must place on the table about them to discuss today. Our children are entering into puberty at a much younger age. How much younger? Well, back in the 19th century, girls began menstruating at the average age of 15. Today, girls begin at the average age of 12. And hey, many are developing breasts at the age of 7 and 8. Boys are also maturing way too early, with some ethnic sets maturing at the age of 9. That soy is now present in so much of our children's food, and that our children are now entering puberty so early, lead us to ask, how did soy become a ubiquitous ingredient in our food? Does soy contain ingredients that could affect the development of our human body? And finally, could ubiquitous soy be the cause of precocious puberty? Well, here to help us consider these questions today, we have one of my favorite people, pharmacist Ben Fuchs. He, the host of the Brightside Radio Show. Ben, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a big, big fan of your work.
Thank you, and I of yours as well. I guess I should put this on the table. Fair disclosure, this Ben guy is a favorite of mine, and he is one of these people I turn to for advice with respect to nutrition. But Ben, you're a compounding pharmacist. Now, how did a compounding pharmacist become a nutritionist?
Because I love the molecule. I'm a lover of the molecule. You know, our world is structured in a certain way. From a chemical perspective, it's structured in this invisible way that we really don't pay attention to. But if we started to delve into what exactly makes the world the way it is, what makes things solid, what makes our world appear visually the way it appears, you boil it right down to its fundamental nature, and it's molecular. So if you really understand how molecules work, how things go together at the molecular nature, you can be a compounding pharmacist, you could be a regular pharmacist, you could be a nutritionist, you could be a skincare chemist, you could be an herbalist, because everything involves how these things interact at the molecular level.
And now you're all of the above.
All of the above. And not only that, but you know what? When it comes to chemistry, chemistry is nothing more than the science of how things go together. And when we have when we think about chemistry, typically we think about organic chemistry or inorganic chemistry. But you know what? You and I talking together right now, that's chemistry. You know, there's a website called chemistry.com where you figure out how to meet people in social relationships. So understanding things at the chemical level means understanding how things go together. And the way I look at it, once you understand how things go together, you can understand anything. You can study any. You can become an expert in anything, including nutrition, including herbalism, including medicine and compounding pharmacy. Really anything. It's just the art of how things go together.
Well, today we're here to talk about ubiquitous soy, and regrettably, I invited Nancy Chapman, who is the executive director of the Soy Foods Association of North America, to come and join us today on this discussion. And she did agree, saying that she would be happy to stand up for soy and to refute any notion that there could be a correlation between soy, ubiquitous soy, and precocious puberty. And she said she even had government studies and whatnot to prove that. But I think when she heard that pharmacist Ben Fuchs was going to be on the show, she ran for the hills because she's nowhere to be seen today. That, I think, is of the 911 food chain shows I have broadcast, I think that's the first time that's happened to me. So it's kind of, oh my goodness, what did I do? But I don't think I did it. I think it's your fault, Ben.
Maybe, but you know, I was listening to a guy talk before. I was on hold for the last half hour. I was listening to somebody talking on your show about astaxanthin. I don't know if you caught that.
There yeah, a little bit.
Right, and so what I was thinking when I was listening to this guy, and astaxanthin can be important stuff. But what I was thinking about this guy extolling the virtues of astaxanthin is the idea that he's selling astaxanthin, and so he's going to extol the virtues of it. And this is the problem with health and nutrition in our world today. We have combined the idea of selling things and profit and the corporate mindset with health and nutrition, and it doesn't serve the public. And so this poor gal who didn't show up, she's got a tough road to hoe because she's got a vested interest, she's got a mortgage to pay, she's got kids to put in college, and she's got to pay the bills. And so she has to extol the virtues of something that the research is absolutely voluminous on. There's literally hundreds of studies that describe the poisonous nature of soy, and she's got to defend this thing, and her livelihood depends on defending this thing. So I got to feel a little bit sorry for her, and I got to I can't really fault her too much for not wanting to come on a show and talk about it. Now, I don't want to beat up too much on soy because there are some valuable things there, but the way we use soy, the way we process soy, the way we how soy is produced and how it's put into foods is really where the problem lies. Protein and processing don't go together very well.
Yeah, let's go back a little bit. When I grew up on the grandparents' farm in Belfry, Montana, way back when, nobody grew soy. In fact, the bean itself is, as I understand it, toxic from the plant. You can't pick a soybean off a plant and eat it because it's just poison or toxic or whatever. And now half the country is growing soybeans. So there's been this tremendous blossoming in the soybean industry. United States produces more soybeans than any other country in the world. 35% of the entire world's crop of soybeans is grown here in the United States. China, that huge country with five times more people, only produces, 6% of the world's soybeans. So somehow the United States of America has gone gaga over soy. And it's to the extent that it's in almost everything. And yet, if you can't, is it true that it's in a raw soybean is toxic?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Plants don't want to be eaten, Michael. I know you study food and that's your expertise. Plants survive by not being eaten. Now, occasionally they'll spread their seeds by being eaten, but for the most part, they've created defenses to keep animals from eating them. And one of those defenses, for example, are what we call phytonutrients. Or one class of these defenses are what we call phytonutrients. For example, phytoestrogens. So you let off the program talking about how little girls are reaching puberty at an early age. You didn't mention that infertility rates are going through the roof and there are animals that are being born with hermaphroditic sexual organs, with male-female sexual organs, and there's species that are becoming extinct. There was a book that came out a couple of years ago called Our Stolen Future. It came out about 15 years ago. I don't know if you heard of this. Al Gore wrote the introduction to it, and it was all about how these endocrine disruptors, these phytoestrogens that are found in soy and in other plants and also in plastics, are wreaking havoc on our hormone system, especially our reproductive system. And this is why little girls are reaching puberty at early ages and infertility rates are skyrocketing. The fact of the matter is soy produces these phytoestrogen, the soy plant produces these phytoestrogenic compounds as a defense mechanism, and a very clever defense mechanism, I might add. The way the phytoestrogens are supposed to work in nature, or how nature intended them, is an animal will eat these plant, these phytoestrogens, these plant estrogens, and then the animal will not be able to reproduce and make more animals to eat the plants. It's chemical warfare. The plants produce these chemicals. Isn't that kind of interesting? And they do it in not to keep that animal, because it's not going to kill that animal, but it will prevent the next generation of animals.
That's really clever.
Isn't that cool?
Stuff.
Isn't that clever? Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. And all of these compounds, in fact, some of these compounds that we consider to be so nutritious for us are nutritious because of their poisonous nature.
Hey, you're going to have to hold that. We have to take a quick break, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, and hey, we have pharmacist Ben Fuchs. We're talking about soy. Could ubiquitous soy be the cause of precocious puberty? So many of our young are growing mature so soon. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, now, did I hear pharmacist Ben Fuchs right? Did he say that soy has developed certain chemicals to destroy succeeding generations of the critters that eat soy? And if that's the case, what are we doing eating so much soy? Did I hear you right? Is that the chemical?
Isn't that cool? Well, they do other. There's other chemicals too. They produce a class of chemicals called cumestrins that are blood thinners, and blood thinning is one of a plant strategies for making an animal less successful in its life and a less avid eater of that plant. So phytoestrogens, cumestrins, flavonoids, protease inhibitors, phytates, oxalates, these are all substances, lectins, these are all substances that are found, not just in soy, by the way, but they happen to be found in high concentrations in soy, that keep the plant alive, that allow that plant to thrive in this constant battle that is the natural world, where animals are protecting themselves from other animals that want to do them harm in order to benefit from them. It's kind of a dog-eat-dog world out there. And we've all, plants and animals have all evolved mechanisms to keep other animals from destroying them. And that's what we call phytonutrients, by the way. And the reason some of these substances are so nutritious is because they stimulate our liver in a hormetic kind of a little poison, what doesn't kill you, make you stronger sort of way, to make anti-poisons. So some of these things that the plant produces as poisons, if we get them in small enough quantities, can actually stimulate our liver and our body to produce anti-poison compounds, sort of like homeopathy works. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the reasons why plants are so important for us to eat, because of these small amounts of poisons that are in them. Now, if you're just eating small amounts of soy, you may actually get some of the benefits, but it's the fact that these soy products are so ubiquitous in our food chain that's really the big problem.
Well, that leads us to the next question. How does a plant that is designed to produce poisons that essentially would eliminate us, how did that plant become such a ubiquitous part of our food chain?
Agriculture. You know, Jared Nyman wrote a book, wrote an article or a paper on how agriculture has destroyed civilization. We are hunter-gatherers by nature, and we're not supposed to be forcing the earth to produce large amounts of food. When we do that, It creates a situation where we're eating way more of one type of food than we're supposed to be eating. The human species is supposed to be eating a diverse kind of a diet. We're omnivores. We're not supposed to be concentrating on one or two sorts of crops. Agriculture has forced us, and you probably know more about this than I do, agriculture has forced us for economic reasons to concentrate on basically four or five different types of foods. And I mean, what are the, there's corn, there's wheat, there's potatoes, there's,
and
soy,
there's soy,
and there's
but
rice.
How,
and
how did soy become cheap? Predominant? I mean, what is it about the soy plant that, what does it give us?
Well, soy grows, soy, and I don't know a lot about how soy grows, but it seems
it's
to be
a legume.
Very robust.
It fixes its own nitrogen.
And it's a very robust plant. It's very easy to grow, and it's hard to mess up. It doesn't take a lot. I don't think it takes a lot of, fertilizer. It doesn't take a lot of work to produce the soy plant, so it's easy to grow. And that makes the profits much higher. Plants that are harder to grow, it seems like you don't hear a lot about the plants that are harder to grow. The plants that grow in the mountains, for example, like quinoa. You know, you don't have a lot of quinoa crops around because those are quinoa is a more fragile type of plant. Mm-hmm. So I think it has more to do with economic interest than it has to do with anything else.
What do we get out of the soy plant?
It's got some tremendous value. Tremendous value. It's very rich in protein, as all legumes mm-hmm. are. It's super high in protein. In fact, soy may be the highest of all the cash crops, wheat and barley and rice. Soy may be the highest protein content, and protein is very important. Now, think of how we get protein. We either get it from meat, or we get it from densely proteinated plants. Meat is much harder to grow. Factory farming pig farms and chicken farms and cattle ranches, they're very expensive because cows have to eat the plants. It's much cheaper to grow plants than it is to have to raise cattle and raise livestock. So there's an economic incentive to get our protein from plants, if possible, and you get a ton of protein from soy, from all legumes, really, but especially from soy. So I think that might have been the reason, and that's why it's used in baby food, and that's why it's used as a source of protein for growing animals. Soy is one of the foods that they feed cattle, and they feed chickens, and they feed livestock because of its high protein content.
Now, in the East, in Asia, of course, soy has been a food for a long, long time, but they do it a little bit differently over there in that they ferment soy. Do we ferment soy here to feed our cattle and ourselves?
No, we don't ferment soy to feed our cattle, but fermenting soy indeed is a way of destroying and breaking up some of these toxic compounds. The phytates, for example, are broken down by the fermentation process. The oxalates can be broken down by the fermentation process. The lectins, the saponins, these are all compounds that are found in soy that are problematic. They can be broken down by the fermenting process, and that is how the Chinese, for example, and the Asian populations are traditionally use soy. The way we use soy is we process it. Through chemical processing, we break it down.
Now, they process it, too, by fermentation.
Fermentation is a type of natural processing.
Okay.
That's right. We use different kinds of washing chemicals and bleaching chemicals to try to break up the nutrients, to try to free the nutrients and free the genistins and the isoflavones and these kinds of compounds. So yes, fermenting is a type of processing, but it's more of a natural processing. It uses bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
We use harsh chemicals to do our processing. So there's fermentation processing, but I'm talking about industrial processing that creates some of these toxins and some of these problems associated with soy. For example, soy protein isolate is still not approved. It's still not on the FDA GRAS list, the generally approved as safe list, soy protein isolate. And that's really a highly processed soy.
And I don't suppose we'd like to know what kind of chemicals they use to
bleaching chemicals,
yeah.
Chemicals that break up proteins, acids, and things that break up free the proteins from the soy to make them more to create protein.
So this is a much less expensive way of making what essentially is a toxic bean palpable or edible.
Yeah.
Is,
well, you said it yourself. Can you eat soy by itself? Would you ever eat soy by itself?
No.
That wasn't fermented, just to pick a soybean and eat it? You get pretty darn sick.
Well, you know, I Googled that. I Googled, is raw soy safe?
Yeah.
And everything came up and said, it's toxic.
Yeah. Even the FDA recognizes it as toxic. There's like literally hundreds of studies on the toxicity of raw soybeans. And that's not allergens, that's toxins. There's a difference between allergens and toxins. Toxins are straight out poisons. Allergens are substances that stimulate the immune system and can cause reactions in susceptible people, but toxins are just flat-out poisons.
And thus, there it is. It's poison is a poison. So by processing soy, we make it edible. What otherwise would not be edible is now edible.
And we also concentrate the nutrients.
Oh.
You get concentrated proteins. When you do processing, you know, there's some protein in the soybean, but if you concentrate it through factory processing, you'll end up with a dense protein, a dense source of protein.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we're feeding our cattle and ourselves. Is this protein isolate?
Yeah. Now, do cattle eat soy naturally? I mean, do cows eat soy? If you put a cow
Nothing
eats soy naturally. That's exactly right. You know, it requires a lot of work to do, and there's no real need for it. And there's so many other options. There's no real upside to eating soy except from an economic standpoint.
Which, of course, takes us back to here, the United States, and why the United States has become the world's leader in growing and processing soy. 35% of the world's soy is now produced here in the United States. China, with five times the population, only produces 6%. What do they know that we don't know?
I find that very interesting, especially they were the ones, the Asian folks were the ones who first started using soy, and they're only producing 5% with 2 billion people.
Yeah, with five times more people what we have, and they're only producing 5-6% of the world's soy. So to me, that would kind of indicate that they're still stuck in that whole old modality of fermentation rather than industrial processes. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for today. And today we're talking with pharmacist Ben Fuchs. He's the host of the Bright Side Radio Program. You can hear pharmacist Ben all the time just by Googling Bright Side Radio, and he will pop up, and you will enjoy his radio program, as I hope you are enjoying ours today. We're talking about soy. Is soy the cause of ubiquitous soy the cause of precocious puberty? Right back. Well, folks, here's a challenge for you. Go out into the world and find a loaf of bread that does not contain some form of soy. Good luck. I found one here in my community, and it's actually baked by a friend, so I'm very proud of him. I told him he should put it in big capital letters on the front of his package, no soy. But it's just not anywhere. It's just not mentioned the fact that he has no soy. But if you look at packaged foods or processed foods, it's in almost everything. And how does something that essentially is poison off the plant or toxic off the plant that you can't eat off the plant become a ubiquitous part of our food chain? And is that we feed our children so much soy from birth until we run them out the front door, that we feed them so much soy, could it be a cause of their precocious puberty? So those are the questions we have on the table today, and we have pharmacist Ben Fuchs with us. Pharmacist Ben, of course, is a compounding pharmacist who has really become a nutritionist, a skincare specialist, an herbalist, an astronaut, and all kinds of things, because he understands the characteristics of a molecule. And when you start from the basic building block of life, I guess it doesn't matter what direction you go, right, Ben?
It's all molecular. Just for curiosity's sake, what does it say on these breads? They don't say soy right in the ingredient deck. It probably says vegetable gum or something.
Soy lecithin. What the heck is that?
Lecithin. Yeah. Lecithin. Lecithin is one of the components of soy, and actually your body makes lecithin, and lecithin is somewhat ubiquitous in nature. And it's an interesting chemical structure that can help you process fats. Your body makes something called bile, which partially is composed of lecithin. And lecithin is, in the world of chemistry, we call it an emulsifier, which means it brings oil and water together.
Oh.
And it can be used in baking, and it can be used in cooking when there's an oil phase and there's a water phase, and you want to keep everything homogeneous. So soy lecithin is sometimes added to blend the oil and water phases of a product together so it stays uniform and homogeneous. So soy lecithin is a type of soy derivative, but there's stuff, they have these disguised terms that are sometimes soy products. Artificial flavoring, for example, or hydrolyzed plant protein. Hydrolyzed vegetable protein is a very common one.
So when you see hydrolyzed vegetable protein,
more than likely you're dealing with soy. Sometimes you're dealing with excitotoxins. Sometimes these hydrolyzed vegetable proteins is a disguised way of saying glutamates, which are excitotoxins. So when you see things like TVP, sometimes they'll say TVP, textured vegetable protein, or HVP, hydrolyzed vegetable protein, sometimes you're dealing with glutamates, which are excitotoxins. Sometimes you're dealing with soy. It's unfair, really, to have these kinds of disguised terms. How can we make an informed decision on what we're eating or what we're purchasing to eat if we don't know what these things are and we've become oblivious to ingredients? I tell people, if you're buying a product, you should be an ingredient reader. You should be reading labels. And ideally, do we really want foods with a lot of ingredients, Michael?
If you can't say it, you shouldn't eat it. That's my...
Basically, 90%, I was reading a book. There's a new, you probably have seen this book. Mm-hmm. It's called Foodopoly. Have you seen this new book?
Mm-hmm.
Food, right? In the book, she talks about the gal, I think it's a lady who wrote the book, says 90% of the food that Americans eat are processed foods. 90%, Michael. That's the vast, vast majority of the food we eat. The food we eat contains these kind of witch's brew of chemicals that we can't pronounce, that we don't understand, that we don't even know what they are. When they have these disguised terms like natural flavoring and vegetable gum. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And it's just one of the foundation products of that processed food industry, of course, is soy. It's a magic bean. That's all I can say.
It is kind of. You can make ink with soy, and you can make paper with soy, and you can do all kinds of things with soy. It is like a magic bean in that sense.
Well, Ben, we have all kinds of people that wanted to jump in and talk with you today, and I have yet to put out the phone numbers, so I guess I shall right now. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. We're talking with pharmacist Ben Fuchs. The subject is soy and the ubiquitous nature of soy along the food chain. It's here, it's there, it's everywhere. We're feeding our children soy, and our children are going into puberty at a much earlier age than traditionally, 3-4 years earlier. Young boys going into puberty age of 7, or what is going on? That's what we're trying to figure out today. Is there a correlation between the fact that we're eating so much of this bean that you can't eat off the plant? It's toxic. You cannot pick a ripe soybean off the plant, pop it into your mouth. It's poison. And yet it's become ubiquitous. So that is the question today. You're invited to join us. We're at 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. Right now, by golly, we're going to go to Sam. Sam, welcome to the food chain. Are you there?
I am. Do you hear me?
I got you. Thank you.
Two questions. One is, how do we know that hormone disruptors and other situations causing early puberty don't come from all the plastics in our life, or the pesticide residues, or the fact that 97% of soy is genetically modified? And you can see about that on that genetic roulette movie on Google. And the second question is, you do eat soybeans. Edamame is just, all you do is cook it and then you eat them. So two questions. One is, how do we know it doesn't come from other sources? And
we don't.
And
we don't know. That's a very good point. Xenoestrogens, foreign estrogens, come from all kinds of sources. Estrogens are a very fundamental structure. What we call there's no one thing called estrogen. Estrogen is a family of chemical structures that are all very similar. And these chemical structures are found everywhere in nature, and they're found in industry, and your caller's point is very well taken. It's not just phytoestrogens, it's xenoestrogens, chemically modified, chemically industrially produced chemicals that have this estrogenic structure that the body gets confused from. The body's not used to having estrogens all over the place. It doesn't know about industrially produced estrogens. Mm-hmm. So when you drink water, for example, out of a plastic jug, plastics leach out these xenoestrogenic compounds, and when you drink them, your body thinks it's getting real estrogen, and it goes into the estrogenic response. And, oh, by the way, estrogen is a major stress hormone. And the reason why estrogen causes so many problems is because it activates the body's stress response system. It's an emergency hormone, and it's only supposed to be produced in quick bursts and then destroyed rapidly. And it's only produced under conditions when an organism is under conditions of stress or when it's making a baby. And it's only produced in quick bursts, and then the body has mechanisms for destroying it. But when we immerse ourselves, saturate our tissues in these plastics and xenoestrogens and pesticides, etc., your caller's point is well taken. It's not just phytoestrogens. It's foreign, chemically produced, industrial xenoestrogens that are just as problematic.
Well, when we talk about the impact of these things on the human body, you know, the human body has evolved over a long, long time.
Millions of years.
Yeah, and genes have evolved over a long, long time. So when we look at this rapid change in sexual maturation, you got to think it has to be something in the environment rather than in our genetic code, right?
Well, yeah, our genetic code is perfect. I mean, it evolved over millions of years to weed out problems. Now, I won't say perfect because there's probably still evolution still occurring, but it's pretty darn close, and that's how evolution works. It weeds things out.
Hold on, folks. We have to take a quick break. 831-479-1080. Right back with the second half of Sam's Question Edamame. It's safe to eat in Asia, but not here. Well, there you go. What do you think? Could ubiquitous soy be the cause of precocious puberty? Gosh, Sam brought up a point. 94% of the soy that we consume is now genetically modified to be able to withstand herbicides and to produce pesticides. We're eating a poison plant that produces poisons. Finn?
Well, here's a couple things. First of all, I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Soy does have some valuable nutritional substances in it. Certainly, it's a great source of protein. It has minerals in it. It has B vitamins. There's some good things right. that you can get out of soy. So you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But you want to make sure that you're, first of all, not eating a lot of it, because you want to have a diverse intake of, you want your calories to come from diverse sources. You don't want to be just concentrating on one food source. And secondly, it's the processing that where you really run into problems with soy. Now, edamame is a real interesting subject, because edamame is an immature soybean. It doesn't it hasn't built up the same kind of toxic profile that an adult soy plant that the more mature soybean will have built up. So that's first of all. So you can eat small amounts of edamame.
Would that explain why China only has like 6% of the world's soybeans? It's such a small percentage with such a big population.
Would what? I'm not sure what you're saying.
That edamame is, you eat it in a fermented soybean in smaller amounts.
Well, edamame is not fermented. Edamame is a baby soy plant, and it's sweeter than soy. Babies tend to be sweeter than adults. Have you noticed that? It's true. Baby lambs are sweeter. That's why veal is sweeter than an adult cow. And there's a sweetness to younger animals and younger plants. And edamame is a sweeter plant. And that's why it's more tasty and it's more palatable than regular soy. It also, because it hasn't matured, it contains less toxins than are found in the mature beans. And if you're not, don't have a problem with allergies, or you don't have a problem with food intolerances, with the lectins that are associated in the beans, you could probably eat small amounts of edamame, and you could probably eat small amounts of soy. It's the excess ingestion, and it's the processing where we run into problems with, in my opinion, where we run into problems with soy. Too much of it, and too much of the processed form of it.
And Jim, what do you think?
Well, I have a little different take on the evolutionary strategy of the chemicals in the soy plant. I think that you may be correct about on the insect level about the reproductive effects. However, on the forager level, I'd like to challenge anybody to eat a good lunch and get a quart of good chocolate soy milk and drink that with your lunch. And now you might not want to do this if you work like outdoors or someplace that you don't have a restroom available, because the soybean has, Ex-Lax has no fury like the soybean.
So what do you, How are you? I'm curious about why you do you not agree that at the forager level, xeno or phytoestrogens have an evolutionarily supportive mechanism, are an evolutionarily supportive mechanism for the plant.
I think at the forager level, the plant strategy is to interrupt the digestive system and flush the what do they call that? To scarify the seeds and just get them out of there as fast as possible.
That could be. That could be. That might be one of the ways that it works. I'm not, I'm sure that, see, estrogens have multiple mechanisms, and there's multiple reasons why estrogens or phytoestrogens are toxic. And one of them is this whole idea of stopping the reproductive process, but a second thing might be to stimulate the evacuative process to get
it,
the animal to lose.
It does work that way, and another plant that it reminds me of is the castor bean, of course.
Castor bean is the same way, absolutely. Castor bean is one of the most toxic substances in the entire plant kingdom. In fact, the CIA uses something called ricin to kill people, and ricin has a reputation for being one of the most toxic substances in the natural world and is found in abundance in the castor bean. But by the way, the castor bean, because of this toxicity, also is a very medicinal plant and has a lot of wonderful medicinal properties. So you got to kind of think, not everything is black and white. You know, when we talk about toxicity, there's also an element of medicinal properties. So, yeah, the castor bean is another example. And beans in general, which are classified as legumes, as you know, Michael, have a certain toxic profile.
Right.
And for many people, they're going to have a problem with these legumes and beans. And that includes peanuts and soy and castor beans and pinto beans. Beans in general can be problematic for a lot of folks. And the main reason is these phytoestrogens that I would present, or these phytonutrients that I would present, are mechanisms that the plant uses to keep people from eating them.
There you go. Jim, that was a great comment. What about you, Annalise?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
Hi, Annalise.
Hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
I'm glad
thank
to hear you. You're always such a wealth of information, knowing you at any level. You just really get to know a fascinating human being with all kinds of information.
Thank you. It's coming from you, Annalise.
And he's going to be an astronaut, too, because he knows all about molecules.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, coming from Annalise, that's a great testimony, because Annalise is a brilliant woman herself.
Annalise, what do you have for us today?
Okay, so the question, I have two questions for you, Ben.
Yeah.
One is that you know that the reason why soybean became so popular was at one point, especially after the Second World War, people in Japan had very little protein, so they began to use what used to be considered only a peasant food, that is, the soybean, became ubiquitous in their diet, and hence it became very, very popular, thinking that the soybean was going to take over and provide for them the protein they weren't able to have or even grow because of the bombings that happened in Japan. However, the problem was that, you know, they could grow a lot of it, and it got out of hand. Why the United States, especially when they balance soy with rice, it provides a perfect protein. But
what's the question, really quick?
The question is this. We use lecithin, and it's in almost everything that we have.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to help you break down your fat, so that it helps you to digest fat and also make it more useful.
And the question is?
Collecting. How do we stop that, one? And two, why does that still persist in use today in our food?
Thank you. Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, Annalise asks, what can we do about all the soy in our food? Well, Ben, what can we do?
Well, first of all, I think the whole lecithin subject is kind of interesting. Lecithin is super, super important stuff. And when you're talking about soy allergies and soy toxins, typically they're not going to be in the lecithin, although people who have severe allergies may want to avoid it, just because you never know what kind of residual toxins are left in a processed product. But the most of the problems associated with soy are not going to be in the lecithin. Although soy lecithin comes from soy oil, and soy oil is made through a seriously intense chemical processing, it requires seriously intense chemical processing, including solvents like hexane, which are designed to free the oil. So you may want to be careful with lecithin, although if you have allergies, it's really the protein content that you're allergic to for the most part. There are other ways to get lecithin, too. Eggs are probably the safest, best way to get your lecithin. And then also you can buy rice lecithin if you don't if you want to stay away from soy. Now, I didn't quite understand what her question was about avoiding lecithin, did she ask?
What can we do about all this?
You don't necessarily want to avoid lecithin, although you may want to avoid soy lecithin if you have a serious problem. Lecithin can be a great supplement to take for people who have fat absorption issues, and fat malabsorption is really a significant health issue that confronts us as we get older, especially confronts women as we get older. And if you have problems absorbing fats or utilizing fats at the small intestine level, or if you have liver or gallbladder problems, you're going to be compromised with your fatty vitamins, you're going to be compromised with essential fatty acids, and you're also going to have a problem getting fatty nutrients. So anything you could do to support fat absorption can be in your interest, in your health interest, and using lecithin can be an important way to boost your body's ability to absorb and utilize fat. So I don't think I would avoid lecithin, and I don't even know if I would avoid necessarily soy lecithin, although the whole GMO issue is significant, and we haven't even touched on that.
Nope.
But as your caller said earlier, 94%, I didn't know it was that high, but I knew it was a lot of the soy crops are GMO crops, and you know that might be something that you want to stay away from if you're looking for soy lecithin.
Well, let me ask you this before we go to our final callers here. You know, our genes, like we said, evolved over a long period of time to tell our body how to grow up and develop in the world. And yet our children are now maturing sexually at a much earlier age, so something signaled it's time to change. Probably not our genes. Must be the environment. Is it global warming? Is it toothpaste? What the heck is it, if not ubiquitous soy?
It could be, it's probably a whole bunch of things, but the fact of the matter is in the last 200 years, we've changed our environment so dramatically that our genetics really haven't had a chance to catch up to it. I mean, think of all the different things that exist in our world and that we interface with in our world through our water, through our air, through our food in the year 2013 that didn't exist in the year 1913 or 1813 or 1713, which is just a few hundred years ago. The body hasn't had a chance and our genetics haven't had a chance to catch up. Given thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of years, our genetics will probably be able to adjust to this kind of ubiquitous intake of soy and perhaps even toxins in the water and toxins in the air. But do we really have hundreds of thousands of years or millions of years? Probably not.
Huh. I better not hold my breath. Dan, do you have something really quickly here?
Yes. I want to ask, I have a dear friend whose daughter is vegetarian and she doesn't like a tempeh, and the mom says she gets a sprouted.
Really quickly, Dan, we're out of time.
Sprouting soy is definitely a way that you can make it a more healthful food. You can break up a lot of these anti-nutrients by sprouting. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, he's gone. Pharmacist.
Real quick,
go ahead.
We don't have time to talk about sprouting. Sprouting is really amazing because sprouting is a way that is activate seeds. When we eat a seed,
we're out of time, Ben.
Okay.
But hey, people could always hear you on the Bright Side Radio Show. Thank you, Pharmacist Ben, for joining
us.
Thank
you, Michael.
And shame on you, Nancy Chapman, for not.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.